Cass Wheeler, CEO of the American Heart Association. Thanks for joining us today on Health08.org.
My pleasure.
So according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, one in three Americans live with one or more types of cardiovascular disease. How is our current healthcare system working for them?
Well, it's not working real well for them. When you think about healthcare system, it's really an oxymoron. It's not about health. It's about sickness. It's not about care. It's about money. And a system certainly implies that all parts are working together, and we know that's not the case. I think that the number one challenge that we find is that we have a healthcare dysfunctional system that is designed to handle acute disease, but the big problem today is chronic disease. So you've got a system that is designed for acute disease, and yet in 2006, of the $2.1 trillion spent on direct care, $1.5 trillion was for chronic disease. And providers don't get paid to encourage prevention. So there is no reward, and so there's no incentive to address the prevention issue.
So for the American Heart Association, then, what is your remedy for fixing what you see as the number one issue?
Well, first of all, it's not a simple solution. But the American Heart Association believes that any solution should embrace four principles. Number one, quality health care for all, because all Americans deserve effective prevention, treatment, and care. Number two, health care that is affordable, because getting the health care we need should not bankrupt individuals, families, businesses, or society. Third is health care without the red tape, because all Americans deserve a health care system that provides clear, upfront explanations of costs and benefits, provides the best value for their dollar, and eliminates unnecessary paperwork. And fourth is health care when and where people need it, because all Americans, regardless of their health status, deserve adequate coverage that gives them the best available treatment and care in appropriate settings through all life stages and levels of disability. So the American Heart Association believes that these four principles should be followed as a foundation for any solutions or remedies.
So what do you feel like is standing in the way of those four remedies?
Well, again, because it is a complex issue, you tend to, if you don't address it broadly, it's like a balloon. You squeeze on one part and it bulges out the other. But some of the obstacles that we have, you look at the general public and there's cynicism about government and concerns about bureaucracy, red tape, and high costs. There are also obstacles due to special interest groups. There are concerns about who pays, and there's a fear on the part of the general public that if they support health care reform, that it will mean higher costs and lower quality. Now, I do believe that these barriers can be overcome, and I think the solutions are to make sure that we're providing personal responsibility and choice in any solution, that we craft a uniquely American solution, whatever that might be, that we support small business in the process, that we propose initiatives that reflect voter values, and that we keep government as a watchdog. But what I do deeply believe is the longer we wait, the more painful the situation becomes.
So let's get a little bit more specific on some of these issues. First, the issue of cost. Heart disease and stroke here in the United States is projected to cost more than $448 billion this year alone. And that includes healthcare expenditures, also lost productivity from morbidity and mortality. Part of that cost includes 6 million hospitalizations each year, 81 million doctor visits, and a large portion of our country's prescription drug spending. So from your perspective, are there any principles that can be applied to reduce costs or implement more efficient spending?
Well, definitely, we believe that there is adequate funding out there. We ought to be able to increase the quality of care out there without increasing costs. They don't necessarily have to be mutually exclusive. So increasing access to care could reduce disease and cost by allowing quicker care and avoiding expensive late-stage treatments. And if we could improve the quality and efficiency, that could promote savings, and we could reduce costs. By reducing the cost, we could spur innovations that could produce greater efficiencies and higher quality. We feel like that we need to drive more quality care that is performance-based, that is based on best practices, and the data indicates that more than half of physician care is not based on best practice. And best practices take too long to become accepted. When you think about it, we're all at risk of less than optimal care, but racial and ethnic disparities are pervasive. The Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality says that American blacks receive poor quality of care than whites on about two-thirds of quality measures and have worse access to care than whites for about 40% of access measures. Hispanics receive lower quality of care than non-Hispanic whites for half of quality measures and have worse access to care for about 90% of access measures.
Can you talk about how and why you see it's important then to broaden access to insurance?
Well, it is important from a cost standpoint. It's important from a prevention standpoint. And it is about quality of life and value. We simply have to get everyone the care they need when they need it, not just half of the care. And even worse for those of color or those that do not have coverage.
Now, earlier you talked about best practices, and I wanted to ask you your thoughts on comparative effectiveness or evidence-based examination of treatment, and if you feel like that's an appropriate way to get better value.
Absolutely. We need to have more evidence-based practices and tests and procedures done. And this really ties back to our current system pays for units of care or piecework and doesn't pay for outcomes. And we've got to be more focused on outcomes and doing only those processes that there is evidence that it makes sense to do those processes, tests, and procedures. Now, the other issue that you have to deal with, though, when you start thinking about that, is the defensive medicine is another problem. And that occurs when doctors order tests, procedures, or visits to avoid high-risk patients or procedures mainly to reduce their exposure to malpractice liability. So they're trying to make sure they're going, well, maybe it's in a gray area here whether I should do this test or not, but I might get sued. And in a 2006 Pricewaterhouse study, they estimate that between 7% and 11% of health insurance premium dollars are a result of the direct cost of litigation and widespread practice of defensive medicine, which winds up increasing healthcare spending by about 10%. And
so do you feel like malpractice reform then needs to be a part of overall healthcare reform?
Well, I think it certainly has to. That's where we have to take this comprehensive view. and look at all aspects of the system and make sure that just because we solve one part or think we solve one part and squeeze on that part of the balloon, that there's not the unintended consequence and it doesn't bulge out the other side.
Cardiovascular diseases are largely preventable. So how does that affect how you look at improving our healthcare system?
Well, we have simply got to have provisions in any sort of reform that has some incentive and reimbursement for the providers to provide primary prevention, to get reimbursed on results. And what we need to do is need to get people off of tobacco products. We need to get them on good diets, good exercise programs. And if we have an incentive to the patients and we have an incentive to the providers, then we can start getting upstream so that people don't get the diseases in the first place.
Now, the Heart Association works with lawmakers at both the federal and state level. For you, what is an appropriate role for both the federal and the state policymakers in our healthcare reform debate?
Well, I think that ultimately Congress is going to have to deal with this issue. And so I think that the role for a number of groups like the Heart Association is to make sure that the policies that are passed by the federal government, because a lot of this is going to be guided by any changes that occur in Medicare, and we've got to make sure that they've got good quality information and are making good informed decisions and not making political decisions and not catering to special interest groups, and that they're focused on the patients.
In looking ahead to 2009, when we have a new president, a new Congress, how hopeful are you that the momentum is real for change in our healthcare system?
I am more hopeful than I have been in some time. I think that the pain is being felt acutely by virtually everyone, including corporate America. And you have all three presidential candidates addressing the issue and making a pledge to take on the challenge. And I think I'm beginning to sense that maybe there is more interest developing in Congress, but that has to be on a bipartisan basis.
Cass Wheeler, CEO of the American Heart Association, thanks for joining us on health08.org today.
My pleasure. Happy to do it.